Hey, I'm Michael Dorenda.
And I'm Jake Bennett.
And welcome to episode 152 of the North Meet South Web podcast.
You know, I like our long intro music. It was such a good song, such a good intro. I mean,
it still is, you know? But you listen to all the podcasts now and all of them are just straight into it. And
hey,
and
is that who we are, Michael? Are we just everybody else? We're just following the whole, you know, no uniqueness necessary. Just, you know, follow the lemmings right off the cliff.
No. I put all of my uniqueness into
your hairstyle. I get it. Into my hair. I understand. Yep. Your hair. I understand. Fair enough.
Someone said to me the other day, what color is coming next? I said, I don't know. It's just Eli's got his
looking quite blonde.
School sports day coming up next week, I think. So I will go, he's in team blue, so I'll put some blue stuff in my hair for that.
There you go.
Just extreme blonde at the moment.
Nice. Hey, it's, you know, it's like that surfer blonde. It's and nearing the end of the summer, you're mourning the loss of summertime. So, hey,
yeah,
I get it. Yeah. I understand. Hey, today I got, see if you can tell what I'm showing you.
You've got some new AirPods at last.
Yes, because the old ones were absolute garbage. And the only way I know.
Did they go in your ear? Is that the thing? They crackle.
Yeah,
and then eventually you just put up with it initially.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you reset them a few times and they get better. And then they crackle again. And then it's like really annoying. But you're like,
it's not that bad.
Like, I don't need to. And then and I was complaining to Ree about it. And she's like, just get new ones. I said, no, that's fine. And then she had reason to use them one time and she was like, get new ones now. You can't do this now.
And like honestly, like my right micro they wouldn't work if the microphone was on the right ear. So I had to switch it to the left ear because the microphone stopped working. And so like if I ever just had the right one in, a phone call came in, I couldn't pick it up. So I had to grab the left one annoying. And then when I would put my finger on my left one to like adjust it, it would whistle. Like it would whee in my ear. Really high pitched. Oh, so annoying.
Every now and then and it would just happen at random as well. And you'd be like,
exactly. And so
I think, you know,
finally,
it's just the AirPods. But yeah, the new ones are nice. They often fall out of my pocket. They just end up somewhere. And it's the worst when they fall out of my pocket when I do, you know, bedtime with the kids and they're left in the bed. And it's
good luck trying to find them in there.
So now, you know, they've got Find My. They're much better
which
with
is so nice.
But like, and
the
they
little,
make the sound as well with
the
new case, which you can't really do when you've, you know, suspect that you've dropped them in someone's bed because you don't want to wake them up with that chirping. But they are quite handy, much easier to find.
The old ones, if you couldn't find them, you couldn't find them. There was no, you know.
Yeah, yeah. If you go to the Ben Orenstein, Adam Wathen School of AirPods, as soon as you have to spend more than 30 seconds looking for them, you just go on apple.com and you buy new ones.
That's hilarious.
They'll turn up eventually, but you just get another pair. I think Adam's got like six pairs. The last time I saw, he's like, you know, you go to the swingers party and they put the keys in the bowl where he's just got a bowl full of AirPods.
Yep. Just doesn't matter. They're all interchangeable. Just pick up a pair, put them in your ears. Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny. Yeah. That's pretty funny. I was looking at AirPod Max and I'm like, I don't know. I would consider getting some just for like when I'm sitting down for a long coding session. Yeah. Do you use them?
Usually only when I go to the office because these are good for noise canceling, but they don't block sound.
Whereas those
are much better, the over ear thing to just block out. But I don't.
And I've got an office.
When I'm at home, I've just got the HomePods here. So I've just got the HomePods going on all the time. I don't really. They're good at night when I want, like there are some TV shows that I want to, you know, like we just watch. And it's fine if it's like it's dialogue or there's not much going on, but there are some shows like Halo, for example. I want to watch that with full volume, so I put the.
Is that good? Should I watch that? Is it on what channel is it on? Is it on Netflix or is it on Apple TV?
It's on Paramount Plus. It's Paramount Plus.
Oh, okay, I could get there.
Season one had a really strong pilot, and then a lot of like filler between episodes like 2 and episode 7, and then like.
Uh-huh.
2 good episodes or whatever it was, 3 good episodes to close out the season and then kind of ended. And then this season, I think, is much more in line with like the action aspects of Halo. But I think there's a lot of reticence around the fact that, for spoilers, skip forward 30 seconds.
Okay.
That he, like, that they're not wearing their suits. Like, there's a lot of the like, not, there's still action parts, but there are a lot of, like, action parts out of their, like, Master Chief suit. So I think there's some complaints about that. But they've spent a lot of time. I enjoy it. You know, the episodes are 45, 50 minutes, an hour
did
long.
Did you play Halo as well growing up? Like, did you know Halo storyline?
I've played and finished all of the, like, single player Halo games. I never got into, like, ODST the multiplayer to stuff. Me, but yeah.
To me, that'd be like if they came out with, like, a Half-Life show or something. Because that was mm-hmm. like, you know, that was my jam when I was a kid. Loved that stuff.
Yeah. They're doing, what's coming? Something comes out next month. There's Borderlands, which is a movie. The trailer came out a couple of weeks ago. And there is Fallout. I think HBO's
Fallout. That sounds interesting.
The Fallout is out next month, which would be interesting to watch. I've never played Fallout. I couldn't. It gave me the headaches and the head spins of there are some games that just do it to me where they just I can't play them because the motion or whatever. They just give me terrible headaches and stuff. So that was one of those games. But I'm into watching, you know, TV shows and things like that. So I'll definitely
I'm more about a movie than TV series. Now, some people would be like, oh yeah, but a TV series can go, like, so much further in depth and everything. And it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. it can, but I just don't have the patience or the commitment. It's like, I want to go and watch 2-hour movie. So I went and watched Dune 2, for example. Like, mm-hmm. it was like 3 hours. It was so good though. So good. Yeah. Really long, but really good. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they didn't make it a TV series. It's just not the same. Like, you can't watch a TV series in IMAX. You know what I mean? So it's like,
well, they're doing it was really fun. Harry Potter. They're revisiting Harry Potter. I think HBO or Max or whoever they've picked it up, and they're going to do, like, each book will be a season of the show.
That's kind
of
cool.
It'll be interesting
to
see how they kind of do
There's
that.
There's a big enough fan base. It'll do fine. You know, Harry Potter's so popular. Even I mean, just with like the young generation now, like, my kids love the Harry Potter books.
Yeah,
and so it's funny. It just sticks around. It's got a lot of staying power.
Certainly does.
Hey, help me understand here. What does reticence mean?
Like,
you said, there's a lot of reticence around, and I was like, I don't know if I know what that word means.
It's
I know, it's so funny because we use words, like, and then we're like, I know what it means in context.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, when you kind of reserve, like, people are kind of against it because it's people want, essentially, pick up the story and all of the action and whatever, like, basically pick up the campaign from the game and put it into a TV series.
Yep.
Which is, but, like, gamers are always like that. They're like, it's not exactly how I want it, then it's no good.
I know. It's like the people who read the books.
Enjoy the thing
first
for what
and, like,
it is.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, I read the books. It's not like the books. It's like, I know. It's different on purpose. Like, it's not supposed to be the book.
I learned about this in, like, ninth grade English. It's like, when they adapt books to different mediums, whether TV or movie, they can't just do the same thing. Like, the storytelling has to be different in the visual medium. You don't get, you know, the exposition and, like, all of the explanatory stuff. You don't know what the characters are thinking. Like, you have to tell the story in a different way. And so, yeah, look, it's like, maybe it's not true to the story. You know, everyone goes on, there's lots of lore around it, and things like that. When Mortal Kombat, the new Mortal Kombat movie that came out a couple of years ago.
I know what it was. Yeah, it looked interesting.
Everyone was kind of like, there's so much lore and story to Mortal Kombat that you didn't have to, like, you inserted a character into the movie to tell the story of, like, what Mortal Kombat is. Mm-hmm, and I think I see it from that point of view where you're making a movie for a certain demographic. Like, you're making a movie for Mortal Kombat fans, but I think they went to the point where they were like, we're trying to bring new people into it. And I think when you do that, you are making a different piece of media. Yeah,
totally.
You're trying to pick up a new audience. It's like, there's 20 or 30 years of Mortal Kombat. People can go back. They don't need the backstory. They don't need to know. Like, there are elements of it, but don't, like, create a character to tell the story because you don't want to risk people, you know, not understanding something. So they can go and check that stuff out after. I think, you know, that's the same with Halo. Like, just tell a story.
There we go.
Anyway.
Well, that was kind of 10 minutes of something you didn't come maybe to hear, but maybe you did. I don't know. Sometimes people are like, oh, no, I like the sort of pre-show.
Who knows what this podcast is
anyway? Literally, who does? I mean, I remember back when we first started it was we had people on all the time from like, you know, we had Freak on and we had Marcel and we had Taylor and Adam and, you know, all those folks. And now we just sit down and chat. I mean, maybe we should line up more guests. I don't know. Yeah. So guess what I broke out again today? Actually, yesterday.
What did you break out today?
State machines, of course. X State for the win. So there was this, here's, let me tell you the scenario, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There was a field and we needed to be able to have a file number entered in the field. And then when they pressed enter or tabbed out, it needed to go fetch three different things. And as long as all three of them returned successfully, you needed to put a green checkbox in. But if it did not, you needed to put a red error symbol. Well, if any of them fail, you can immediately put the error symbol in. But you have to wait until all three of them succeed to put the green checkbox in, right?
Yeah.
And if you get one success and an error, you just show up, throw error. But if you get a success after an error, you have to make sure it doesn't change back to success because it's not success, it's error, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't do anything to change that error state or that success state unless you change the file number, right? So if you had, you had, let's say, like 1, 2, 3, and it errored, well, we're not going to retry 1, 2, 3 unless you change it because it's invalid, right? So it's like if you change it, if you do on change, then you need to change it back to a ready state so it can go from ready to loading again, right?
Yeah.
So this was a complicated issue, and like what it became apparent. Because the developer who was working on it was inspecting like five different fields all at the same time to determine what state he was in. And it became obvious to me that it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to be sustainable when I was having two icons overlaid on top of each other at the same time, right? There was like an error icon and a loading icon and a success icon at the same time. It's like, how do you get into that weird state? But it's possible.
Schrodinger's icon.
Weird... Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Schrodinger's icon. Yes. Case. Yeah. And so anyway, really interesting. I should share it. But
State machines to the rescue again.
Exactly. That's literally what it was. And so we had a ready state, a loading state, a success state, and an error state. But the thing that was cool about this is in the success state, you had two different, you had a event that I was listening for in the loading state, you had a an event that you could listen for, success. Okay, or error. So if you had error, you'd immediately transition to the error state, right? But if you had success, you wouldn't do anything immediately. You would just kind of wait, right? So if you had a success state, what you would do is instead of transitioning to another event, you would run an action. And the action was increment success count. So when you were on loading state, you could accept one of two events, error or success. Error take you immediately to the error state. Success increments the success count. But every time you would come to the loading state again, every time any event that it was listening for would come in, there was this thing called always, and it would evaluate this statement every time. And so what it was is it was an always, and it was a conditional that said, if you've reached a success count of 3, then you should target the success state. And so it would just, you would hit it. Yep, I got success on one of them. Okay, great. We'll increment the count. Success on another one. Okay, great. We'll increment the count. Success on the third one. Okay, great. We'll increment the count. Oh, is it 3? Yes, it is. Transition to that other state. So that was the magic sort of stuff there. And then the nice thing is, if you transition from the loading state to the error state doesn't listen for success events anymore. So it doesn't matter. If you got a success event after an error, it's not going to change it back to success because it can't. It's not listening for that anymore. So it was perfect. It was just the perfect use case for when you would need this state machine. And it's so beautiful. Like, no, I got rid of literally 8 variables. Like, it's just so nice. And so
it's nice to have that real world example as well. Like, mindful of the fact that you have this talk coming up to kind of like refresh it a little bit. If you wanted, you've got a real example to use rather than the contrived, the invoice is a good one as any, but having... we're telling the same story, but with a different example from a real world application is always nice to have. And it's not always possible, obviously, when you're giving a talk to translate like something from your work into the talk, but having the ability to do that and having like this tangible thing that it's like, I've not just come up with this contrived example, because then you have to think about all of the situations in which you might apply that or use that for the purposes of telling or giving the talk. You've got like, no, these are the things that I have proven to be true with a real concrete example.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Like this is a real world thing that I actually did that I used this for. So anyway, yeah, that was really cool. And it cleaned it up a lot and it felt really nice to be like, ah, validated again. Like, yes, this is the correct solution for this location. Not always is it, but a lot of times it is. And so that felt good. I was trying to see if there's any of the libraries I could use to do it in a smaller form, like in a much smaller way, but it was just like, nah, I'll just go back to X State for JavaScript stuff. So it was good. So that was sort of a recent thing I've been working on. I mean, other than that, it's basically been just all out sprints, man. We've just been killing it. Like, we've got so many things in flight right now. It's kind of crazy. I was messaging a guy that's like a senior at another company, like, hey, dude, what would you think about like spending a couple hours a week, like a day a week, just reviewing pull requests for me? Just like, I just need another set of eyes from a senior to just be, take a look and say like, oh, no, that doesn't look right. Like, or you didn't think about this, or you know what I mean? I don't need him to write code. I just need him to look at code and just point out areas where it's like, that doesn't seem like correct, you know, because it's like there's like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 pull requests out there at a time. And it's like, I can get to some of them, but I can't get to all of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want everybody waiting on me. So,
yeah. Well, now that we've kind of combined our back end and front end into a single repository, there are like 20 or 30 pull requests on the go at any one time. And it's like, okay, I only want to look at the back end one. So I forced everyone to tag their PRs. And so I will only look at the back end ones, and usually only either if I'm like between tasks or if someone specifically asked me to look at something, because my code review, like we all review each other's code, which is good.
Sure, sure.
And now that the team has grown, there's people at different levels that like, you can write the code, you can review the code, even like the junior reviewing up to a senior's code is good as well, because they can ask, they're going to ask questions. They're not just going to assume that something is correct, or they're going to see things in a different way. They won't understand things necessarily. Like if you use a collection pipeline, they might ask, what are you doing here? Or why did you do it this way? Or whatever. So it's good from that perspective to kind of get the team writing more approachable code, I think, rather than just like benevolent me reviewing everyone's. And that like takes a lot of time as well. But I find that when I'm in a position to review code, the outcomes are very different to when, you know, other people are reviewing code, and I'll find things that others won't see, or I have a different level. And there's like a lot of it is also the feel, like, you know, when you're reviewing totally code, there's the feel of the code.
It's like your preference. Yeah. It's just like, hey, this doesn't feel right. It's like, well, and why? Where's the rule that tells me that's not the case? It's like, well, there's no rule. It just doesn't feel
there's
right.
There's no rule. But like when you look at like a constructor and using constructor property promotion, like where do you draw the line between all of those things being on one line? Well, sorry. Not.
Oh, sure.
Constructor property promotion is probably not a good example, but like a method. Where do you draw the line between having all of the parameters on one line and when do you start to split it up so it's one per line?
You know? Sure.
And it's I think like our sort of soft rule is when it gets to like 120 characters, you kind of start splitting it up just to kind of make it easier to read, especially now that we're kind of embracing types a bit more and we're using more complicated method signatures. When you've got like, this is an array or null, you know, that kind of stuff, or a nullable array. And then you've got like, this is an object of type, whatever. And so these things then start taking up more room. And it's not just a matter of looking at like dollar variable equals, you know, null comma or whatever. Now you're looking at like two or three pieces of information potentially for every method argument. So splitting them up onto one line, you know, each of them being on one line, it makes it a bit easier to digest as well. And sometimes you might look at it and you go, I'm, you know, passing too many variables in here. Maybe I've missed something. And that, you know, it's, you know, that kind of thing where rewriting the code in a different visual presentation, you know, from one line to five lines, makes you sort of stop and think a little bit more about what you have actually written and whether or not it is the most appropriate way of writing that piece of code. You might find, oh, we need to actually set something as an instance property on the class and then reference that rather than passing it between methods and so on and so forth. So it does help, I think, to reveal some patterns about your own code, and certainly makes it easier to approach refactoring.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you know, what it ends up looking like.
Yeah. Yeah, or like things like, you know, how often should you use like a form request? Like, if you only have like one thing to validate, should you use a form request to do that, or shouldn't you? Like, do you, you know what yeah. I mean? Which one yeah. should you use? Like, so anyway, some of those things are yeah. coding standard things. You literally could probably, you know, you could enforce those things with like pests, architecture plugin, and things like that, probably.
For sure.
But
yeah. yeah. Do you, just on form requests, because I know that you're a fan of them.
I am.
Do
yeah.
you. Mm-hmm. Use Sparsi's Laravel data package at all?
I don't. We've talked about it before. You and I have, actually. And mm-hmm. if we've been talking about it a little bit inside of our other chat, as far as like, where should like the line be drawn for when a form request is used, or if you should say like, yeah, we only use form requests up until this point. So we say, mm-hmm. you know, once you're out of the controller, it should no longer be a form request. It should now be something your domain owns, and it should be a DTO. It should be something like that.
Yeah.
We do have places in our code where the request is literally drilled three layers deep, right? That's not great. So I could see using Spassi's package. It certainly makes it a lot easier, right? But I'm sure there's some, you know, using any tool for long enough, you'll find the spots in which it fails, right? Where it's like, it's yeah. insufficient and you have to do something else. So I can't speak to that though, because we don't use it. So I know you guys do though. How's it going with it?
Yeah. All right. So I will pose you then it's not a hypothetical, it's hypothetical for you.
Okay.
But it's
okay.
the reality for me. We have a form request, right? It has all of its rules. It does the validation. We then take that and we pass it into the Laravel data object.
Okay.
Now, the Laravel data objects have these magic creation methods. So you go like person name, colon, colon, from, and then you pass it the request.
Okay. Yep.
And what it will do is it will look for either a from request method on the on that that data object,
yep,
and
yep,
resolve
that
it
sense.
Using that. And uh-huh. then you can do all kinds of creative things like from model or from user model. So you could
sure.
you could specifically do this, and then Laravel the package itself uses reflection and some magic to kind of figure out like of these magic creation methods. So they all start with from, they're all public, they're all static, which one best maps to this thing that I have been passed, and it
interesting.
Kind
okay.
of instantiates the object. Now, from model, from array, from string, these are all fine. What I find, and I want to hear your take on this, is that if it's building the request from, if it's building the data object from a request, it does its own validation to make sure that all of the input in the request, so the stuff you take from like request input, request JSON or whatever, maps
yep, yep.
to a property on the data object before it calls the from request method.
Hmm.
Right. So in the example of like person data, you might have your data object as name, email, phone number, for simplicity's sake.
Okay.
But in the request, we're capturing first name, last name, email, mm-hmm. phone number.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. because in the specific instance of a request, what it does is it passes it through this like pipeline of stuff where it normalizes the request. It does all this other kind of stuff. But the thing that has tripped me up is that we'll also do a level of validation that there is a property on your data object that matches your request. So keeping in mind that I have a request that has first name, last name, phone, and
right.
email, and a
yeah.
data object that has name, phone, and email. In my from request method, I would then take first name, last name, concatenate
yep.
it into name,
right.
and then instantiate
yep.
the object. But mm-hmm. because the request does not match the DTO exactly, it hits the validation error in the Laravel data package that says this field is required, name is required, but it's not set. So then you've got to like do these gymnastics around using this other prepare for pipeline method, which then allows you to kind of massage the request into a format that matches the DTO, but it just, it kind of muddies things up a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think.
And so now we've got like two places doing validation where I would expect that all of that request validation happens in the request object and that you don't try and magic it up for me in the data object itself.
Yeah, well, because it's also not even like the rules that you have specified in your form request, right?
Yeah.
It's different. It's like it's magic rules that aren't even really defined anywhere except for you know that the package is going to do it.
Well, it's based on the definition of
public first name, public full name. Yeah,
public
exactly.
String name. Yeah. Public string name, public string phone number, public string email. Like those are the three things. So it will
I guess the thing that would be nice is if it did something like if it had like a use validates before request or something like that. If there was like a trait or something that you could turn on or off, because then that would make a lot of sense. But to say like that from request method is just automatically sort of getting this decorator around it that's going to do all the validation stuff, like that feels a little bit weird. It feels like, because now what you have to do is you almost have to like create your own static method on that thing called from our request, you know what I mean? And then pass it the form request that way and then handle it by instantiating it yourself.
But I mean, the problem is that it specifically checks if the input to the from method is an instance of request.
And if it is, then it will
shove it through this pipeline, right?
Yeah, so that makes sense.
You don't even get access to your own magic method until it's run through that process.
That's rough.
So, you know, there are two options, right? It's either conform your request exactly to the data object. Or actually there's three options. So that option one is to conform your request.
Go ahead. Yeah, you figure it out. You say it. Because
the second option is to call from request directly, which then skips the magic creation. Okay, and the third one is to use, which is what we've done, is to use like the without validation attribute on those properties to specifically say, don't try to be smart about this. I know how I'm going to massage this in the from request method. Like I don't, and I haven't gone into like the history, the commit history of the package or to try and figure out like why this was implemented, like what the thought process was behind it. But for me, it feels a bit counter, like it's not a PHP agnostic package either. It's specifically for Laravel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm giving you a form request. You know that it's a form request, which I have already validated. I want to use the from request method, which I will do the mapping from what's in the request to what's in the DTO, but you are preventing that from happening by, you know, doing this level of validation. So I just wanted like a second, third, fifth set of eyes at this point is to be like, is this weird? Like, should I get onto
fake? I mean, like,
excuse me.
Because... I think what they've done is they've decided to take the road of saying that we are going to define the conventions and now you can adhere to the conventions or you can do the long way and opt out by yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so I think that's probably the route that they've decided to go. And that's very spossy of them, right? Like so they give you an escape hatch, but they're basically saying if you want to use this package, this is the way that we use it, and we've decided to just follow strictly our requests, which map straight into our DTOs, which map straight into our models, which map straight into our, you know what I mean? Or maybe something like that.
Yeah.
So if it was me doing it, I mean, I think, let me think about how I would do it. If I was doing it myself, what I might do is I might call the from request method directly in my controller. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just let my from request method handle that. And that then using from request would just do, you know, it'd skip the validation stuff. And I could still use from anywhere else, knowing it's, you know, if I'm using that request method, it's not if I'm using that request object, it's not gonna work. But that's okay. I would just use from request in those instances and I guess document well that's why it is that way.
Yeah. I suppose if you look at it from the perspective of the Laravel data object that is created from a form request is being done with the specific intent to give inferred access to the properties, then yes, it makes sense that, you know, this is to replace basically that request object wholesale. And so whatever you map in the DTO needs to match exactly what is in the request. And it's to stop you from passing the request around and using like request import all the way through. Because, you know, we know that that's error prone, that you could have a typo in the string, you request input, request input, you know, name, and you forget the E and it's just nam, and then you end up with num.
Yeah.
Can be trickier to diagnose than to do request nam on, you know, the typed object, which will tell you, no, nam doesn't exist here. So I guess if that's the intent, it's just that, you know, you're not always in control of the data coming into that request, I suppose, but you're always in control of the data object. So maybe it's a PR that I send to the documentation to say that, like, this is the specific intent, just to clarify that. And like, I'm happy to have the conversation, I think, with I think Ruben is responsible for the package, to say, like, why is it like this? And if my understanding based on what we've just said is correct, then can I send a PR to the docs to say, like, this is the intent of using the form request, using the from request function
to map one
and
to
then,
one.
Then it's like clear, and then everyone understands. Because like it tripped me up for ages, and I was trying to find a way around it, and I was, you know, source diving through the package, and it's created in such a way that it's like it makes sense, but it's, you know, you've got to jump through a few classes to find out where this behavior is actually happening, and then and going, oh, okay, I understand why this is happening.
There it is.
Now.
I can see. Yeah. No, it's an illuminate request.
Why it's happening kind of thing. So
Yeah, that makes sense. I thought when you were originally saying it that you were saying that it would basically run the validation step again on your form request. I was like, that seems odd. Yeah.
No, like, it's doing its own like assertions.
I got it. Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's using reflection to find out, you know, what are all the properties? What are their types?
Yeah,
does this thing exist? Is it of the correct type? And like, because I haven't actually got it working in the way that I guess the package intends it to work, you know, I assume that if you type it as a string, it's going to use request input. But if you type it as an integer, it'll use request integer or request boolean to kind of make sure that all of those types match up for you.
Here's one other option for you. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. The other option you could do is you could, in your form request object, you could append a full name attribute to the request in the form request object. So you could say, like, after validation, and then that's going to, you know, make sure that everything's valid. And then you could say this request or this attribute push. It's something like that. Anyway,
yeah, you can set the value.
Yeah, you can set the value basically. And so then you could just do it in there, and then anytime you get the form request, as long as it's valid, it's going to push that value in there. And then when you pass it through, it's just going to set it. No big deal. That way you don't have to do any of that other stuff. It would just work.
Yeah.
And that would work every time. I mean, as long as you validated it, I suppose, but you're going to do,
I think,
it's going to happen automatically when you use form requests in the controller stuff.
Yeah. I think now,
this is where do you want to put the logic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think now having this conversation, having said it out loud, I've like talked myself into believing that it is the correct approach, with the assumption that like that is exactly what the intent is.
Yeah, I think so.
That the data object should in fact map the request one to one. And so yes, you are defining the things in two places, but it does mean that you get a typed object as you go, you know, through the application depths.
Yep, exactly.
We've hacked around it for now, and we're just leaving it at that, but it'll be something to keep in mind for future, because like none of the other people on my team that had been working with it had encountered this problem, and I'm like, have you not encountered, like, are you calling the from request method directly? Are you...
Right.
But I think I figured in the end that they were, in fact, doing the mapping of the form request one-to-one with the data object, and that makes sense that they never hit the issue then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it is really nice just to have that typed object you can pass around and new up and tests and all that stuff without having to have a form request and then pass it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really nice.
All right, I've talked myself into thinking it's okay. We are.
Yes, indeed. We are out of time. Hey, thanks folks for hanging out with us. 152. I was going to say Laravel News. Not Laravel News. Northeastsouth.audio/152 for show notes. Hit us up on Twitter at Michael Dorn, at Jacob Bennett, or at North South Audio. Rate us up in your podcast catcher of choice. 5 stars would be amazing. Until next time, folks, we'll see ya. Peace.
Bye.